to the 33rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name's Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Today, I have a fantastic guest. His name is Howard F. Lyman. He is the author of Mad Cowboy, Plain Truth from the Cattle Rancher Who Won't Eat Meat. As you if you've known about Howard Lyman, he is famous, or his claim to fame began when he was on the Oprah Winfrey Show talking about mad cow disease, and basically the bringing up really in the 90s about factory farming and how it basically destroyed his ranch and how things had changed. He grew up on a family farm and, you know, went to college and learned how to do things with herbicides and pesticides and antibiotics, and he saw the grass die, saw the bees and the bugs go away and the birds go away, and one thing led to another. As the story will progress during our interview, he quit cattle ranching and tried to represent the small farmer as a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. That was quite an uphill battle as well. And we talk about, you know, all the strife and troubles that he went through doing that. But basically along the way, he became vegetarian and then vegan, and his health markedly improved. And basically he has dedicated the rest of his life to spreading the word about the health benefits of plant-based nutrition, about the environmental benefits of organic farming, and the bringing to light, you know, the animal abuse associated with factory farming. So he's an amazing individual. He's 77 years old and as spry and as energetic and as active as he ever has been. And so we had a great chat. He's a very humble man. He's accomplished a lot in his years. You know, I think you have to, you know, just to be amazed by someone who was, you know, so entrenched in the cattle industry and was able to look back and change things. He was instrumental in getting the Organic Production Act of 1990 passed. It was signed by President Bush, which was the beginning of organic labeling. So, you know, he has been very instrumental in a lot of great things that have happened. And I think you'll really enjoy the interview with him. I'm sorry to say that the follow-up with Eric hasn't been without rocky moments. He is still struggling. So we're continuing to try to work and help him to come up with ways to sustain his plant-based journey. From an endurance aspect, back running, did 7 miles today, back biking, did 66 miles on last Sunday, and back swimming the whole distances. It's a bit painful to come back and regain your fitness, but worse things could happen, so I'm really happy to be able to be outside. The gardening is going well. Potatoes are going well. Let's have some more Swiss chard coming up, but the tomatoes and peppers and everything are hanging in the hot summer heat of Florida. So I'm very happy, and we're continuing to progress. And actually, we have a little okra that's up, so that's good. So all is well in the gardening aspect. So I won't bore you with my life anymore, and we'll get right into the interview. Good evening, Mr. Howard Lyman. You know, Mr. Lyman, I'm a cardiologist, and I'm trying to educate people on a plant-based diet, and you have been on every side of vegan and plant-based. You started out as a cattle rancher. You've been a lobbyist for the small farmers. You've used herbicides in the past, and you know what those are like, and you've changed to being a vegan. You've had your own health problems that you've got over, so you know, if anybody's qualified to talk about this, you certainly are. So welcome this evening.
Well, it's a joy to be with you. And I have to admit that I'm convinced in my own mind that if I hadn't changed my diet, that I'd be probably in some cemetery somewhere. We couldn't have this conversation tonight.
Well, I'm thoroughly convinced that this is the way to health. It's amazing that something could be so poisonous yet so health promoting, depending on how you go about it. So tell me, you inherited the family cattle business, and you went to school and you became one of those smarter than your dad kind of farmers. Is that not right? You learned how to use all those kind of pesticides and herbicides and.
Yeah, I thought the thing to do is if you were going to become a farmer, you ought to be one of those mega farmers and get bigger or get out. I went to Montana State University and got a degree in agriculture and came home plumb full of myself that I had all the answers. And, there was never a chemical, herbicide, pesticide that I wouldn't use. And, the amazing thing about it is the reason I became a farmer is I loved the birds, the trees, and the soil. And under my management of the farm, I saw the birds die, the trees die, and I saw the soil change. And, I was so sure that financially that I was doing things correctly that I couldn't see the forest for the trees. And you get involved in something, you get so close to it that you think that what you're seeing is not really true. It's all got to be right. If it wasn't, there'd be somebody in Washington, D.C. that would stand up and say, whoa, let's not go that direction. But the one thing I did learn in my years is that we have the best government money can buy. So I sure wasn't any help to the environment the way I was farming. I know that.
So it was kind of the health scare that you experienced yourself that kind of gave you time to step away and look at things. You had a tumor in your spine, is that correct? And
yeah, I was basically paralyzed from the waist down, and doctor told me, he said, you have a tumor on your spinal cord, and if the tumor's on the inside of the cord, you got less than one chance in a million you will ever walk again. And I will say that something like that really brings you up short, makes you stop and think, and brings a lot of things into focus. When this happened to me, I thought, one chance in a million, I'd probably be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And I wondered, what kind of a invalid am I going to be? Am I going to sit in that chair and feel sorry for myself? Or could I actually make my life amount to something? Could I do something worthwhile? I had a wife and six kids, and it really made me get things back in focus. And I made up my mind before the operation, and I had no doubt in my mind that I'd probably be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And I made up my mind that never again was I going to be blinded by what was actually going on. And I was going to pay attention to the truth. And I made up my mind that I never again in my life would I do something that I did not think was correct. And I walked out of the hospital with a one in a million operation, and trying to bring my life into order with my new commitment, I wondered, what in the world am I going to do? And then it came to me, I thought, gee, maybe I ought to become an organic farmer. maybe I should try and get the farm back to what it was when I was a kid, with birds and trees and living soil. So I went to my banker, and I said to my banker, I said, I need to borrow some money. He said, oh, yeah, no problem there. What are you going to do with it? And I said, well, I'd like to become an organic farmer. He looked at me, and he laughed, and he said, you want me to lend you money, and you're not going to spend it with my other customers, the chemical dealer, the pharmaceutical dealer, the fertilizer dealer? He said, there's never going to be a day like that. And so 1983, I sold my farm and paid my debts. And, well, I started working with other farmers not to make the mistakes that I made. And then I had an opportunity, and they said, how would you like to go to Washington, D.C. and work on Capitol Hill? And I thought, wow, 535 members of Congress? I just absolutely knew they wanted to do what was right. And boy, did I get an education when I went to Washington, D.C. I can tell you that we have the best government that money can buy. And here I am, I'm back there, and I'm working for small family farmers, and I'm absolutely convinced that it's a charade, you know, that the decisions are made by such a small group of people, that what's happening up on Capitol Hill was just something to keep everybody involved and let them think that they knew what was going on. And here I am at that time. You know, when I was in college, I was a football player. I weighed 300 pounds when I played football. And when I was in Washington, D.C., and I was working on Capitol Hill, I went and stepped on a scale, and wow, I was well over 300 pounds. My blood pressure was sky high. My cholesterol was over 300. And I thought, wow, I think the thing is, I should probably try out a vegetarian diet. But, you know, here I am. I'm working for a farm organization, so I became a closet vegetarian. I lost some weight. My blood pressure went down slightly. My cholesterol went down. And I thought, if I can do that, being the world's worst vegetarian, just think what I could do if I became a vegan. Well, I became a vegan. I lost 130 pounds. My blood pressure went from sky high to normal. My cholesterol from 300 to 135. You know, today it's 108.
Wow.
And I've been a hardcore vegan now for 25 years. And, you know, the amazing thing about a doc is, I enjoy food more today than I ever did when I was eating the standard American diet. But I know when I look at my own cohort of individuals I grew up with, my class reunion, the 50th class reunion I had in Great Falls, Montana, one-third of my class has already died. You know, I walked in to my class reunion, you never saw so many canes, crutches, and walkers in all your life. And I walk in and nobody comes up and asks me about my vegetarian diet until I go to the bathroom. And all of them sneak up and say, do you ever sneak out and get a burger? Well, it's an amazing thing. I'm 77 years old now, and I get up every morning at 5 o'clock. I end up a volunteer working at the Oddfellow Cemetery, and I go up and I irrigate the cemetery, and I mow the lawns, and, you know, I fix the broken pipes and help set up tombstones. And I work as hard today as I ever did, and I know doggone well that there's nobody in my high school class eating the standard American diet that's going to be able to do that. And so I look at it and say, I'm probably the luckiest person in the world. I ended up with the best diet I could ever have. It works for this body, and nobody enjoys life more than I do. So all in all, I'm one happy camper.
That's fantastic. When you went to work for the small family farm, you know, or you just, you know, you declare that you're going to do organic farming, was, you know, did people, you know, think that some of your co-workers or farmers in the area, did they think you were crazy?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the people that are in the in crowd, you know, the peer pressure is there, that you've got to do what everybody else is doing. You got to adhere to the party line. But you know, the fact of it is, I'm not the only person there that was farming that saw the loss of the birds and the trees and saw the soil change. But for them, it was better to stay with the group and never say anything about it, you know, to go out and encourage people to become organic farmers. You know, my father was an organic farmer. My grandfather, my great-grandfather, they were all organic farmers. And when I told my dad many years ago, after coming home from college, telling him that I was going to use all of these chemicals, he told me at the time, he said, "You are wrong." And he was right. I should have listened to him. But, you know, we get involved in this peer pressure. We take things as being factual when they're no more than advertising. And, boy, I'll tell you, I can remember when I ended up changing the way I was living. The newspaper, they listed me as an outcast. Mm. That I was no longer part of the group. But I'll tell you, I'd much rather be an outcast alive than I would be like my brother, you know, 30 years old, ended up dying from Hodgkin's disease. And it wasn't until many years later, I was talking to Dr. Keith Colin Campbell, and we're in my office in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I looked across at him, and here he's holding his cheek while he's talking to me. And I'm a pretty plain-spoken old farm boy, and I said to him, I said, "T, why in the world do you do that?" And he said, "Well, you know, in my research, I identified a toxin called dioxin, one of the most dangerous chemicals on the face of the earth." And he said, "I had no idea at the time how dangerous it was, and killed the muscles in my face." He said to me, he said, "Do you ever have anybody in your family die of cancer?" And I said, "Yeah, I had a brother die of Hodgkin's disease." And he said, "Did you know that Hodgkin's was caused by a dioxin that was in a chemical that we used in Vietnam that was called Agent Orange, 245T. I said, "I didn't know that. We used it like, you know, by the barrel full. You know, no gloves, no goggles, no protective clothing. There was nothing on the label that said, you know, there's things in here hazardous to your health." Well, my brother, 30 years old, ended up dying of Hodgkin's disease. And so it was a lesson learned way too late, but in plenty of time to share it with people today. And, you know, what we need to do is we need to stop and ask ourselves the question, who produced my food? How did they do it? What did they use on it? What did it do to me, the environment, the animals? What did they do? And so every time that I go to the grocery store, I always try and find that that is grown organically. And one of the proudest things I have in my tenure in Washington, D.C. is I was part of the movement that got the National Organic Standards Act passed. And it was quite a feat in itself. But without that happening, without having the National Organic Standards, there would be no way in the world that we would end up being able to go to grocery stores today and buy the organic fruits and vegetables that are available. But none of that's near as good as producing it in your own garden, knowing what was used on it. My wife and I, we live here in Ellensburg, Washington. In our backyard, we have 13 fruit trees. We have 9 raised beds. You know, I just absolutely love to be able to eat out of our own garden.
Yeah, there's nothing better. And I think it's sad, especially young people, the kids just don't have any idea where their food comes from. It just comes from a window, basically, or a box. And, you know, we just don't take time to think about it. I grew up and my dad had a garden and my grandparents had a garden and my uncle had a garden. And I remember, you know, on Labor Day, we would all go in a small town, they would take a tractor and go from garden to garden and plow potatoes. And everybody would, you know, pick up the potatoes. And, you know, in the summertime, we ate what came out of the garden. And, you know, there's a big lapse until, you know, now I have raised beds in the backyard, and I can't wait to go out every morning and see what's come up and how things are doing and nurture them along the way. And, you know, like you say, eat from your own garden. It's wonderful.
It is. It's really nice when you go out and you look at those plants. They'll tell you a wonderful story if you look at them closely. You know, they'll tell you whether they like the heat. They'll tell you whether they're getting enough moisture. You know, they'll tell you a terrible or a good story, depending about how the conditions that you're treating them. So I just love them. And, you know, I'm really addicted to rhubarb pie. We have rhubarb in our backyard, and rhubarb and strawberries together. One of the best pies in the world, and I happen to be married to a phenomenal cook. You know, I married much better than she did, but I'll tell you what, there's nothing in the world that I enjoy more than eating out of the garden and eating healthy.
So when you were in Washington, you know, you said you were over 300 pounds, and it sounds like your wife probably knew you as a big guy most of up until then. And so you got the bright idea that you were going to become vegetarian. How'd you break that to her?
Well, it was really easy because she was a vegetarian before I was. You know, she was always, when she was young, she was one of the largest kids in her class. And she decided early on, when she was about 8 or 9 years old, that she was going to be a very conscious eater. And she was a vegetarian long before I was. But I became a vegan. And she said, oh, you know, it's really not that important. A little cheese or milk is not going to hurt you. And it wasn't until she heard a lecture by Dr. T. Colin Campbell, and she came back and says, you're right, I'm going to become a vegan. So I've been a vegan for 25 years, and she's been a vegan for 24. She was a vegetarian 2 years before I was, so she got the upper hand on me again.
How about your kids?
Well, you know, it's a surprising thing. We had our youngest daughter, she had a terrible skin condition. And we took her to the best dermatologist we could find and bought whatever medication seemed to be in vogue at the time, and nothing worked. And after I got involved in this issue, I got to looking at the relationship between dairy products and skin complexion problems. And my daughter at the time, she was a student at UVA, University of Virginia, and so I said to her, I said, her name was Molly, and I named her after a horse that I had one time, a doggone good horse, I'll tell you. But anyway, I told her, I said, hey, Mo, you ought to give up dairy products and see whether your complexion would clear up. And she said, oh, Dad, you're crazy as they come. There's no relationship in the world between that. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you give up dairy for 60 days and it doesn't help your complexion, never again in your life will I ever recommend anything to you. And she said, boy, that's worth it. Well, she gave up all dairy. Her complexion cleared up. She called me up and said, you know, Dad, that's the best advice you've ever given me. She says, it may be the only good advice you've ever given me. So, anyway, my kids, I have six of them. I have three of them that are plant eaters, and I have three of them that are carnivores. Do you want to know which three are the healthiest?
You have your own study.
Yep. So, but, you know, it's very hard to be a prophet in your own house. But there is no doubt in my mind that if I had to do it over again, if I would have raised all of our children on a plant-based diet, that they'd all be healthier today. And it's something that I don't feel very good about, and that was the fact that we thought we were raising them, feeding them the best food that we knew how to do, but the fact of it was that was not the case, and I sure would like to go back and do that over.
I was, I think, you know, what you said was great, that, you know, you have to be an example, but, you know, not everybody's going to follow it, and everybody, you know, has to, I guess, do their own journey. Getting back to your book, I thought it was quite intriguing that you mentioned, you know, when mad cow disease in 1989, you know, when all that started coming about, and the ban on English cattle imports to the United States. And there was a quote in there that says 200,000 British deaths are annually was, you know, predicted around the year 2015 because of the lag time of the, you know, the mad cow and the development of the Creutzfeldt-Jakob's type syndrome. I thought that was pretty profound.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I've tried to follow that fairly closely over the years, and in England right now, they believe that the infection of mad cow disease is much more widespread in the population than what they ever thought before. And they do not write off everybody that has, you know, the symptoms of Alzheimer's as having Alzheimer's. In this country, if you end up with some problems with your brain, why, immediately they want to write it off as Alzheimer's, even though they don't want to go do biopsies or anything like that, or when they have people die that actually do autopsies on them. I personally believe in this country that a large number of the increase of Alzheimer's is directly related to Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And the CW, it just doesn't make sense to me that we will see Alzheimer's accelerating at the rate it is without some outside factor. And in England, they understand that. They actually test. They go in and do autopsies. They have, theaters that's all they do is autopsies on suspected Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease victims. So I believe their research a lot more than I believe shrugging off we have increased cases of Alzheimer's, because I don't believe that's true.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I wonder that, and your spinal tumor. I wonder how much that was affected by the herbicides. I mean, it's amazing, but what things have come about. I know that, you can't feed cows to cows. That's been outlawed, but we feed fish to pigs, and we feed all kinds of parts. It's still going on a little bit, right?
Well, here's the crazy thing that happened, Doc, is they basically say you can no longer feed a cow back to a cow. But you can feed a pig, a chicken, a horse, a dog back to a cow, or you can feed cows to pigs, chickens, horses, or dogs. But I believe that there is good research out there that shows that CJD can be transferred from one species to the other and turn right around and feed it back to cows. I think that's the craziest thing in the world. We're so tied up in this profit incentive that the members of Congress are so beholden to the financial donors from the big agribusiness that they don't want to uncover any of this. They don't want to look at it. They don't want to pass any laws out there that are really beneficial to the general public. All they want to do is get reelected, and I think in the future we're going to pay some terrible prices for that. If we look right now, we're talking about global climate change. First time in the history of the world that a species is now affecting global climate. And that species happens to be Homo sapiens, people. And so they look at it, the United Nations comes out with a report, and they say that 18% of all global greenhouse gases are coming from livestock. Well, that's a greater percentage than all of the transportation sector, greater than any other pollutants that are out there. And so the World Bank, they went and hired some consultants, and they said, well, we're having a hard time believing that the United Nations is right on this. 18% really seems high. So the consultants, they go out and they look at the methodology that was used by the United Nations to come up with this 18%, and they came back and they said, well, you were right about being, cautious about those numbers, but, the fact of it is it's not 18%, it's 51% of the global greenhouse gases are coming from livestock, because compared to carbon dioxide, methane coming from animals is anywhere from 26 to 100 times more detrimental to the ozone layer than carbon. So You know, you ask people today, are you an environmentalist? 79% of Americans will get up and beat their chest and say, absolutely, I'm an environmentalist. I care about the environment. And you ask them what they're eating, they're still eating animal products, even though that's where over half of all of our global greenhouse gases are coming from. So we've got a long way to go, Doc. We've got to start taking a look at the facts and scientists. Scientists are supposed to be people that follow the facts. We have a whole lot of scientists right now that are just as blind about the facts as I was when I was farming.
Yeah, and then, you know, the whole grass-fed movement, you know, it's hard to get, you know, it's like it's one, there's not really any standards when it comes to that. You know, as a rancher, I mean, they may be finished or have a little bit of time out in the grass, but for the most part, it's the same thing, right? I mean.
Well, you know, you're a cardiologist. You know that when people come to you and they have heart problems, and they say to you, but gee, I've eaten grass-fed beef my entire life. It's like asking somebody, you know, would you rather be shot or hung? Both of them are going to kill you. And it's you might as well bite the bullet and look at it and say, meat from animals was not designed to be the fuel for the body of the Homo sapiens. And that's just as true as it is. We happen to be a starch-based critter. That's the fuel for our body. And if that's what you're eating, your body performs very, very well. When you start putting in the fuel that wasn't designed for the body, that's when they end up with a lot of them coming to your office.
Yes, I see very few plant-based people, and if they are, they've transitioned relatively recent, and they're trying to get somebody else to listen to them, and or they don't want to take all the medicines that have been thrown at them. I saw a nurse today in my office, and she has vascular disease, and I started talking about a plant-based diet, and She's like, well, I really like vegetables, but I also really like meat. And, you know, I said to her that, you know, basically, you know, have you ever seen in your career as a nurse, physicians take people off of medicines? We just keep adding them on because, you know, there's no cure in sight from a medicine standpoint. I said, on the other hand, you know, I'm here. It's like, I believe you can completely get off your medications. It's just a matter of eating a plant-based diet that has absolutely no side effects, you know, as opposed to all these procedures and medications that, you know, you're willing to expose yourself to. And it's shocking for the people that come into my office because they don't really expect to hear that. You know, it's starting to turn around, but there's a tremendous amount of resistance. There's a tremendous amount of they don't want to be ostracized. They family members they don't believe that they should do it. Spouses don't want to do it. People don't want to cook. It's a very difficult message to get across.
I can remember the time I went in and I was seeing a doctor. I had some problems with a detached retina in my eye. And he said to me, he said, what's your diet? And I said, before we get to mine, I want to know, what's your diet? And he said, well, I'm a vegetarian. And I said, well, I'm a vegan. And he says, now we can proceed because I know you're not brain dead. So.
Yeah, I told someone today, it's like, you know, your doctor should walk the walk. So if they're recommending one of these fad diets, yet they don't look healthy, then, you know, the proof is in the pudding there that, you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
That's true. And, you know as well as I do that when you're a physician and you see a lot of people and nobody comes to you because they're in tip-top health, everybody's coming and they got a problem, and you look at it and you say, there's got to be something wrong, because I don't think these people were designed to have these kind of problems. And when the light finally comes on and you say, well, gee, if we take the human body and we put the right kind of fuel in it, it's amazing what had happened. You know, look at some of the professional football players, for example. Tony Gonzalez was one of the best tight ends that ever played professional football. And he got to talking to Dr. T. Colin Campbell about a vegan diet. And he said to him, this is my profession. If I adopt this diet, can I go out there on the field and compete against people that are eating meat? And Dr. Campbell told him, he said, there's absolutely no reason in the world that you eating a vegan diet, that you cannot go out and perform at even a higher level than you have before. Well, Tony Gonzalez, he took Dr. Campbell at his word. He became a hardcore vegan. Remember, this is at the end of his career. At the end of his career, on a vegan diet, he ended up doing better than he had ever done before, extended his career by years. And he said if he had known about a plant-based diet earlier in his career and had adopted it, he was amazed at what the potential could have been. But here was a man that at the end of his career extended it and did extremely well eating as the body was designed to be fed.
Certainly can't go against that, that's for sure. When I noticed in your book, you were very clear, a lot like Dr. Esselstyn. If you're going to do this, do it all the way. Don't just do a little bit, because you won't see you certainly won't have the benefits. And so is that pretty much what you recommend to people that ask you about this?
Absolutely. It's like, if something is good for you, isn't a lot of it good for you better than just nibbling around the edges? I smoked for a number of years, and when I quit smoking, I went through the doggonest withdrawal you ever saw. And I thought, wow, why in the world would I ever abuse my body like that? Well, I haven't smoked in now 48 years. But when I quit eating meat, I thought that would be the same thing that would happen, that I would go into withdrawal. I quit eating meat, and it was like falling off a log. Nothing. Had no problem at all. But when I gave up dairy, I went through exactly the same withdrawal I did when I was smoking. And so I say to people out there right now, look, I am totally convinced that the best thing in the world for the human body is a plant-based diet. What I recommend is set a time and say, all right, maybe I'm not going to be a lifelong vegan, but I'm willing to go 90 days, 3 months, not a whole lot of time in the life of a human. I'm willing to dedicate 90 days of my life to find out not what somebody else says, but exactly what it's like for me. Give me 90 days on a plant-based diet. I will guarantee you, you will be a hardcore vegan the rest of your life. And you'll be the happiest thing that you've ever been. And you will look at it and say, that's the best investment I ever made for myself. And so for me, I say people, don't, you know, go meatless one day. Don't give up this or give up that. Give me 90 days. I will give you a new being.
Yeah, I think you have to go all out to, like you say, see enough of dramatic benefit to alter your taste buds, to detox yourself from the animal protein and saturated fats. And I do believe that that's, in, again, you feel so good when you go full blast there that I think it's certainly the benefits outweighs the risk of or the little trauma that you may have to go through early on.
Can you imagine back when you changed your diet and your taste buds came back and you found things that had phenomenal taste that you'd forgotten all about? Oh, I'll tell you what, eating a carrot out of the garden or a stalk of freshly picked asparagus, oh, I'm telling you that taste, after you get rid of all of the addictions to saturated fats and cholesterol, all of that, you look at it and you say, that's what it's all about. That's what we were meant to be.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I can't, I have to bring up Oprah. You know, your trauma there with, did you ever, I don't think from your book that you really ever saw that mess coming. Is that true?
Well, no. You know, the interesting thing about it is you commit your life, and, you know, I committed mine when I walked out of the hospital on the 1 in a million operation of following the truth. And I knew that when I was out and I was talking about mad cow disease and I was talking about things that were upsetting to a major animal industry, I knew that it was just a matter of time before somebody would find out a way of coming after me and trying to punish me for what I was doing to their industry. But, you know, Doc, I've been paid the greatest interest in the world of walking again. I'm never going to be scared of somebody threatening to sue me for telling the truth. The Supreme Court a long time ago said you can't be sued for telling the truth. They can pass laws that they can drag you into court for telling the truth, but I'll tell you what, they cannot convict you in the Supreme Court of telling the truth. And I hope that a lot of your listeners that are out there right now realize that the people that are willing to follow the facts, the willing to tell the truth, they're the ones they should be listening to, because they're paying a much greater price for helping their fellow humans than the ones that are out there just being part of the crowd.
Well, you've certainly done a lot of good work in your career. And, you know, again, you've set the, you know, you've looked on both sides, and not so much unlike Dr. Campbell, who started out as a dairy farmer and started out looking to see how milk protein could help people, and then realized that it wasn't helping and it was actually hurting, and changing his whole complete route of research. You know, you've changed your whole outlook and your whole career. So I commend you, very much. You've done more than I think you could ever have imagined when you walked out of that hospital.
Well, that's true. You have no idea what the future is, and it's just about trying to do the best you can do every day. But look at it, it's not about, where do I get the individual enjoyment? It's about how do I become a member of society? How do I help the human race achieve a greater good? How can you look in the eyes of your children and grandchildren and not tell them the truth and not tell them about, what really makes the world go around? And I've been really fortunate. I've met and worked with some of the greatest individuals in the world. You talk about Dr. T. Colin Campbell, another farm boy, ended up with his PhD in how he getting animals to gain weight faster. Well, look at what he's done for people. He did the largest dietary study in the planet. The New York Times called it the Cadillac of all diet studies that have ever been done. Do you realize they still have not analyzed all of the facts that have been collected in that study in China? But there's enough of them out there that we know enough that the people that are not eating animal protein overall have by far better health than those that are eating animal products. And even if they're just eating a few animal products, the ones that eat none are by far healthier.
What would you recommend to my listeners with regard to taking control of their own health and where their food comes from?
I would say the first thing to do is go to the library. They should not change everything that they do just because of what you or I say. They should go and start looking up the facts themselves. Understand the amount of information that is out there about heart disease, cancer, diabetes, the list goes on. And you will find that the information available today is overwhelmingly supportive of what we are talking about. So the first thing, educate yourself. The second thing, take the bull by the horns. Look at it and say, I can stand on the corner. I can shout at everybody and say, be a vegan. But the first thing I ought to do is I ought to work on myself. Adopt a plant-based diet. Give yourself 90 days so that you can readjust the body. Bring your taste buds back. Get over the addiction that you have of dairy products. And at the end of 90 days, take an inventory of yourself. Ask yourself, how do I feel? What's my blood pressure? What's my cholesterol? I never in the world ever thought when my cholesterol was over 300 that I would be lowering my cholesterol to 135 just by becoming a vegan. And here, now I'm 25 years into this experiment, my cholesterol is down to 108. I've had cattlemen tell me, you better be careful that your cholesterol may get too low. Well, I happened to run into a library and did a little studying, and I see that they found elderly Chinese that have a lifelong plant eaters that have cholesterol of 68. So I don't think I'll worry about it becoming too low. But educate yourself. Go ahead and change the diet. See how it works for you. Do your own research project on yourself. And at the end of it, be true to yourself. Follow the truth. And then start sharing it with the people that you love. And I think if you did that, you will find that listening to this radio program is well worthwhile. That maybe it was the most important message you've ever heard in your life.
Well, that's I couldn't have asked for you to put it any better. That was wonderful. You know, you're a true inspiration, and I think, you know, it comes down to it that, you know, with the podcast, I've interviewed various people, dietitian, athletes, and, I really appreciate you taking the time to give me your perspective, because I think, you know, you're a, as we would call it in West Virginia, you're a good old boy, and you've been around the pike, and you've seen it all, and you've seen all sides of things, and, you're truthful, and you want to spread the truth, and it's fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you, Doc, you are a real treasure to this nation. There's nothing in the world that I think helps people more than you find doctors, MDs, that look at it, do the study, and go ahead and change their diets. You know, Dr. Campbell, Dr. Esselstyn, yourself, you know, the list goes on and on. Dr. John McDougall, you know, these are people that are respected medical practitioners that are out there leading the way. And I will tell you, I still believe firmly within my lifetime the majority of Americans will be plant eaters.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to come quicker than a lot of people expected, and it'll be a great, fantastic thing. I'm not going to take much more of your time up. I just, again, want to say thank you for sharing your story with me. And, you know, I know my listeners will just be excited to hear from you. And I wish you all the best and many, many, many more years of happy gardening.
Well, I'll tell you, maybe someday we'll be in the same place together and we'll meet face to face. And until then, keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. And I hope that happens. So you take care. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lyman.
All right.
All right. Good night.
Good night now.
Well, I hope you agree that it was fantastic hearing Howard sum up why you should be plant-based, how many ways you can help yourself, other people, the environment. You know, I think that he is an amazing individual. He's looked at his ways and was able to say, you know, I think there's a better way of doing this. He experienced organic farming as a kid, then he became a factory farmer, then he became sick. He improved his own health by eating plants, and then he turned to service to others, both to help the small farmers be able to not factory farm into organic farm and teach them how. He also has educated others on the merits of the health benefits of eating a plant-based diet, and certainly has spread the word. He had an appearance on Cowspiracy as well that I failed to mention, talking about the environment. So he's just a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience. I truly enjoy talking to people like him that have just had such an amazing life that has been dedicated largely to the service of others. You know, I think that, you know, he proves that anybody can change. You can regain your health at any stage of your life. I've had people come in the office and say, I'm too old to change. You know, malarkey, anybody can. Certainly Howard did, you know, and as he became older, you know, I have a number of people that have, you know, most of my patients are older, and I'm seeing more and more people in their 70s regain their health through eating plant-based. You know, again, I keep talking about my mother. She certainly has. So, you know, I encourage anyone, it's never too late to change. And the more you adopt and the more thoroughly you adopt a whole foods, plant-based diet and eliminate processed foods, the better you'll feel, the quicker you'll feel. You know, it benefits everybody, young, old, athletic, gardeners, and it benefits everybody as far as paying it forward to other people and in the environment. I'd like to thank everybody that's given me a 5-star rating in the past several weeks. I really do appreciate it. It's fun to hear nice things said about you on iTunes, and I encourage anybody else that can take the time to go to iTunes and give me a review. You can find Howard on the Mad Cowboy website. He has a newsletter and posts some recipes, and you can find links to his book, The Mad Cowboy, and it's a very good book to read. And, you know, he'll go into more detail with his story on Oprah. But I do hope to meet him in the future at one of these Veg Fest or plant-based nutrition conferences. I think that would be a real treat. Again, if you have any questions for me, I can be reached at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. I'm starting to hear from a few more people, and that's always exciting. So any questions you might have or ideas that you'd like to hear discussed, I'd be happy to entertain them. So until next time, and we have several great interviews coming up, but continue to eat plants strong, whole foods, avoid the processed stuff, organic as much as you can, and certainly get out there and enjoy the sunshine, whether it's in your garden, running, biking, swimming. It'll make you feel a whole lot better. Until next time, take care.